Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for High Velocity Radio.
Welcome to the High Velocity Radio Show, where we celebrate top performers producing better results in less time. Stone Payton, Lee Cantor here with you this afternoon. Of course, we couldn't get any of this done without our fearless producer, Katie Galley. It's going to be a fun show, Lee. A little bit later in the program, we are going to welcome back to the Business Radio X microphone, the PVA, Melissa Smith. She's been traipsing all over the world. She's going to get us caught up and I know share some insights with us about how she can create time and you can make more money. So I'm looking forward to that conversation. But first up on the High Velocity Radio Show this afternoon, it is my distinct pleasure to introduce owner and accredited financial counselor with MoneyPath. Please join me in welcoming to the broadcast, Mr. Stephen Newland. Good afternoon, sir.
Good afternoon. Thank you for having me today.
Well, Stephen, can you share a little bit about MoneyPath? How are you serving folks?
Sure. So what I primarily do is I work with people to essentially accomplish whatever financial goal they want to. I don't do investments. I don't do insurance, things like that. So I primarily focus on helping people pay down debt, get on a budget, track finances, track their expenses and income. And then, if they want to build up an emergency fund or build a savings goal, that's what I'm there for. And accountability.
So you're not really an investment advisor, but more so of just giving them the structure so that they can execute an investment plan?
That's absolutely right. So a good way to think about what I do is I help people find the margin each month so that I've set them up so they can go to a financial planner or financial advisor, and then they're ready to go.
And what does that mean, find the margin?
So, you know, what I've found in my work is a lot of people, the income that they bring in is just about equal with the expenses that they spend.
No matter what income they bring in?
It is. You would be surprised. I mean, I've met with doctors, lawyers, you name it, I've seen the income level.
So you find that no matter if a person makes $20,000 a year, somehow they spend $20,000 and then 5 years later, they're making $50,000 and now they're spending $50,000.
Yep. That is, it's sad, but it is very true.
So that's not an uncommon occurrence. That happens with regularity.
It does. Yeah.
Now why?
There's a lot. That's a great question. I think, especially with today's culture and, even just the rise of social media, we're getting everyone's perfect picture. So we're seeing when someone buys that, right? We're putting our highlight reel out there. But we're not seeing the 360 view. We're only seeing your best. And so I'm comparing my whole view. I'm comparing my 360 view to your perfect picture that you're putting out there. And I think, well, why don't I have that HGTV perfect house? Or why don't I have that, brand new car, luxury car? What am I doing wrong? And so a lot of times people will make the decisions not necessarily filtering it through a financial lens, but filtering it through they have it, so I should have it.
Keep up with the Joneses.
That's it.
So, so you're seeing, I guess you're saying in social media, I have 20 friends and I see friend number one is in France and friend number two is at the Falcons game and friend number three is having a fancy dinner somewhere. And in my head, I'm seeing, wow, all my friends are doing stuff. And I'm not seeing kind of the whole view of, well, this one friend that's in France, saved for 8 years. Exactly. I just see him in France. And then I'm just accumulating all these friends and seeing each one doing something. And I'm thinking I'm missing out.
That's it. Yeah, you hit the nail on the head. And I think that's human nature. You know, we oftentimes wonder, you know, why, how come I don't have that? And so I think it's perfectly normal.
So then when you feel this pressure of like missing out on these things or keeping up with your friends' successes, then maybe you're going to, I'll just put that on my credit card or,
yeah,
you know, I don't have the cash today, but on my credit card, I got space. So why don't I just throw that on there?
I
deserve it. I've been working hard and mm-hmm. I deserve it. You ever get that?
We hear that a lot. And an interesting response to that is, that's almost how a child responds, right? I mean, that's the mindset of a teenager or a child. So it's interesting that we have that even as adults.
So now how did you get into this?
It's broke.
Ding, ding, ding. Yeah.
Oh, really? So you got scar tissue. This is personal.
Oh yeah. This is very personal. So And I'll just tell kind of a brief story of, sure. of my own personal background with this. So in college, I was a finance and accounting major, and I knew everything about money, obviously.
Obviously, you're a major.
19 and 20.
It's easy.
Right. So, and I was graduating towards the end of the financial crisis, back in about a decade ago. And so I thought, you know what, I'm going to, and so I got a lot of student loans out. My parents, they ended up getting divorced when I was in school. And so the financial footing of our family just dropped. And so it was left to me. We hadn't really planned well. And so it's really easy to get student loans as a student, believe it or not. And you don't always have to spend it on school. I learned that the hard
really?
Way.
Really?
Yeah.
They just cut you a check.
And that's then it. Yeah.
You use it how you see fit.
Right.
And you are 19, so you know exactly how to spend money.
100%. Yeah. So what I did was I ended up graduating with about $55,000 worth of debt.
$55,000. Mm-hmm. That was 10 years
right
ago or 15
out of
years
school.
Ago?
That was 10 years. 10
Ouch.
Years ago. So, and I made some great mistakes. I actually got, I remember talking to my mom on the phone. I was a junior at the time, and I got one of my biggest loans out, $25,000. And I told my mom, I said, I'm going to get an extra $5,000 out. I'm going to invest it. And I'm going to pay off my student loans by the time I'm done with school.
Because how hard is it?
Yeah, right. Know? And the good news is I did that in early 2008. So that worked out really well.
Did you invest in real estate?
Yeah.
A great time to invest in real estate.
It's funny. I remember I invested in a bank stock, and I woke up the next morning and it was bankrupt. And I was like, oh, that's how the stock market works.
Now okay. I get it.
Got it. But anyway, so I came out of school and I realized I felt the weight of that debt. And I just knew that this wasn't right. This didn't feel right. I didn't want to feel like I had this weight.
Did you get a job right out of school?
I did. So I was an intern with Delta down here in Atlanta. Mm-hmm. And I got a full-time job working actually in corporate finance.
So they moved you from Ohio to...
They did. Yep. Yep. So I grew up in Cincinnati, went to the University of Cincinnati, came down here right after graduation. And I just put together a plan and I said, there has to be a better way. I had a lot of friends that had said, you know, we're going to have student loans for 15, 20, 25 years. And I thought, there's no way I want to live like that. And so I put together a plan. I got real intense about, I always had to have a roommate. I had actually had interns living with me in my separate room. There was three or four of us in this apartment that was a one bedroom.
So you were a slumlord?
You could say that. Yeah. Yeah. And I lived down near the airport. It's close to work. The rent was a little more affordable. And so I just, like I said, put together this plan and I kept my expenses very low.
And you were a man on a mission.
I was.
You were like, I'm knocking this debt down by any means necessary. And I don't mind sacrificing today for a better tomorrow.
Yeah. But I would say that intensity came about 2 years into the program or into my journey of it. It took me about 4 years in total to pay off $55,000. And over the course of that time, I was making anywhere from $42,000 to about $55,000.
Mm-hmm. So, that's incredible that you were able to do it. That you must have become very disciplined.
I did, yeah. Over time, and it's interesting. It's I always like to relate money back to weight loss and things like that. But you lose the first pound, you find this motivation to say, "Oh yeah, I can do another kale salad each week. I'm good. I don't need that. I don't need to do another burger." And it's just one of those things that happens when you start seeing the progress. You're like, I've got this. I like that feeling better than the alternative.
Now, how did the pivot change from your career? Like you were in, I guess, finance, but in a corporate setting. And then this environment now where you're like, you know what? I'm going to coach other people. I'm going to help other businesses and just regular folks to get out of debt and to kind of get their financial house in order.
Yeah. So when I left my corporate job, it was actually my last paycheck. One of my last paychecks at my corporate job was the last loan payment that I made. Mm-hmm. And I knew the trajectory of that. And so I knew that I could take an income hit because I didn't I wasn't paying out $600 a month.
Paid. Right.
Exactly. Yeah. I got a raise right away. And so that led me to seek out, you know what, let me use this time in my life. I've got, I can take a pay cut. I've reduced my expenses substantially. Let me just try something that I really want to do. And throughout the time, I was paying off my own debt. I was helping coach people through a nonprofit here in Buckhead, down in Buckhead. So I had been on my own journey, but I was also helping people explore how to do a budget and things like that. at the same time.
And that was rewarding for you personally because it was probably helping you stay compliant because you were helping and teaching others.
Mm-hmm. I loved it. And I couldn't wait to get off work to go do that for free. And I just loved it. And I, you know, had a lot of friends and family kind of knew the journey I was on. They reached out to me for help. And I just thought every time I talked to somebody about personal finance and really budgeting and debt, I loved it. My face lit up. And so I transitioned. I knew there was an opportunity at the church that I attended in Buckhead. And they have one specific staff position just to help people in the church with their financial education program. And so I said, I first saw the salary and I was like, I don't know if I can do that. And then I was like, you know what? Just go. And that was about 4 years ago. And ever since, I haven't looked back and I've just enjoyed every interaction that I've had with people.
Now, how did you go just when you're in this line of work, you're working with people, a lot of people who don't have a lot of money and are feeling a lot of financial pressure, but you have to charge them something in order for you to keep doing what you're doing. So how do you kind of navigate that? Seems like kind of almost a moral dilemma in some regards.
Yeah, that's a great point. And there are a lot of nonprofit programs out there that do offer this at a discount or, you know, even for free. What I've seen is a good way to approach people with this is to say, look, if you haven't tracked your expenses or if you haven't really paid attention to this, I can probably help you find some habits and some disciplines pretty quick within at least a meeting or two that can save you more than the fee that you're paying me. And it's pretty, I actually saw a stat, there's a study done and I think it was YNAB is a popular budgeting app. And they actually said for someone who isn't doing a budget and then they go to doing a budget. So from 1 month to the next, they say it's actually a $200 on average net gain from month to month.
Just by doing taking the action of writing things
down.
Just doing
a budget. Yeah. So just the fact that we're paying attention to it, it was a $200 average change.
Wow.
For the better.
So is that usually one of the first steps? Is that, you can't improve where you don't measure. You got to write some stuff down.
Yeah. Every client that I work with is a little different, obviously. But it really starts with, okay, do you have a budget? And if not, let's just get it all on paper. And, but honestly, what I tell people is even more important than doing a budget at first is just tracking expenses. So we've got to get the actual, like what's reality.
And then can't you just look at your bank statement?
Yeah. Yeah. But so what I tell clients is this is an emotional exercise. So when you write down or you have to acknowledge somewhere, either on paper or on a spreadsheet that I'm spending money here, something funny happens and you start to think through your priorities. Do I want to spend this money here? I use the food example. I did this with calories one year and I probably need to do it again. but what I did was there was this little chocolate drawer at work. And I noticed that I started tracking it. In the first week, I had maybe three or four like those little minis every day. The next week, I knew that, okay, I've got to write this down. I don't want to have to show anybody this and acknowledge that I'm actually eating this much chocolate. So I reduced it to like one a day or even sometimes none. So that same principle applies to finances and to money.
So this conversation that you began to describe, it sounds straightforward enough. I think I can get my mind wrapped around it. If you're having a conversation with Katie Galley, our producer, she's not married. Mm-hmm. She calls her own shots. Lee and I are married. Mm-hmm. So do you have these conversations with married couples who, by definition, this might not be a superpower for either or both and not a strong part of their marriage. Mm-hmm. God love you. Or do you also have like degrees in counseling?
Yeah. So I do not have a degree in counseling. I'm an accredited financial counselor. And as a part of that certification, you're required to learn some basic counseling techniques and some, just communication techniques. But, it's funny. I really enjoy working with couples, but there is an added dynamic when there's another personality and another ego or another opinion in the room.
And it might be priorities. It's like one person might say, look, paying down debt is super important because I can't breathe with this debt. And the other one's like, look, you only live once.
Yeah. It's that's true. I mean, and oftentimes what I've seen and you always hear opposites attract and you're like, is that just a cliche? But in my work, the vast majority of time, spenders marry savers, and it helps, you know?
That helps.
I'm a saver, and my wife would probably say, and I'd probably agree with this, coming into marriage, you know, I would only go out if I absolutely needed to, or if I really wanted to do something. So I would just be a homebody and I would never spend money. And that was some of that's fear-based. Like I didn't want to spend because I wanted to just hoard it and save it. Whereas the opposite with her, she would always want to spend money. So I helped bring her kind of more towards the middle. She helped bring me out of the cave and actually have a life a little bit. So I see that as like a good, you know, it helps bring you back to the middle.
But when you're working with these clients and there is a debt situation, isn't it important for them to be on the same page of, look, mm-hmm. you know what? I know going out's important to you. It's easy for me not to go out, but we got $100,000 here. Yeah. That we both agree is weighing on the relationship and the pressures that we're having, and we're having to make choices based on we have this $100,000 to pay off.
Mm-hmm.
Like, don't you have to navigate some of that?
Absolutely, and honestly, with couples, it starts with you. You know, I tell people a lot, you've got to just come together, and you've got to even talk about what are your dreams, what are your goals, what do you want your family's legacy to be, and just start there. And oftentimes, no one ever comes out of that and says, you know, I'd love for us to have $200,000 of debt.
We need more debt.
And so
100's not enough.
Right. Yeah. Right.
Well, I'll tell you, $100,000 or even $50,000 in either direction can make all the difference in the world in your family tree for the next how many generations?
That's it.
Either eating up resources or accumulating, you know, the greatest wonder of the world, compound interest, right?
That's it.
I mean, yeah. That $50,000 is a big, much bigger number than people might realize.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And so that's where it starts, though. I mean, especially with a couple, if they're not aligned on where they want to go with this, they're going to be pulling in two different directions, and that debt's going to stick around for longer and longer and longer.
But you don't want to be debt-free and have an unhappy wife either. And so if she's the one that would like to go out and eat some, you got to build all that in, right?
Absolutely. And that's, I think that is a big misnomer of folks who teach this stuff is, oh, you're just cheap. You just want to save all the money and not do anything fun. But again, I just use the diet example. If you're eating nothing but, you know, salad every day, all day, eventually, like the third Friday from now, you're just going to get a tub of ice cream and just go crazy.
Right.
And so you've got to build in some of that. You absolutely have to. It's not sustainable. And this is, you know, for a lot of people who are paying off debt, this isn't a 2-month game. This is a 2-year, a 3-year, a 4-year thing. So you've got to make it sustainable.
And that's what you're trying to teach, though, ultimately, is to not make this an event. This is, you're trying to change that. So it's a lifestyle, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Which makes this hard. You know, because you're having to undo decades of, you know, my mom and my dad handled money this way. And well, I handled money this way as a single adult, or, you know, there's a lot of stuff you have to unpack, and you're having to change the mindset of 20, 30, 40 years.
Well, you know, it's February now, so, it's too late to start for 2018, but for the people who want to start in 2019,
right?
Is it now a good time to start a budget, or when can you start?
Just have fun for the next 10 months. Just wait, and then figure it out.
It's a January thing, right? It's not something you can do after January.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah. I say, you know what? You've got March coming up. What is it? You know, it might take you 10 or 15 minutes. Jot down what you want to do for March.
So that's the first step. For the advice you typically give people is what? The first thing that to do is to just start keeping track of where you're spending money.
Yep, absolutely. Start keeping track. And then what that's going to do is give you, okay, this is where we're actually at. And then the next phase of that is a budget's just a plan. Some people hear the word budget and they like tense up, and it's, you know, it feels restrictive. But I like to repurpose that word. A budget is just you telling it what to do. You can tell a budget, I want to blow every dollar. You can tell a budget, I want to save every dollar. So mm-hmm. you should feel empowered to make that budget whatever you want it to be versus letting it feel restrictive.
But some people just, they don't keep track, so they just spend what they got.
Yeah, yeah, which is very unrestricted.
And they may not even know it, because a lot of the times they're not pulling paper dollars out of their pocket. They're mm-hmm. they're swiping a phone over a thing or handing somebody a credit card. I mean, is that true? I should say me. Personally, I'm on top of it more if I pull paper dollars out of my hip pocket. Mm-hmm. It, And if it's, if I make a mistake and buy something I shouldn't have, it's done.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas the plastic can add up on me in a hurry. Is that the other people falling in the same trap?
Yeah, and there's been studies done. I don't know the exact numbers on it, but I remember a study, and I think it was somebody who was consulting for McDonald's, but they were one of the first fast food restaurants to put credit card readers in a restaurant because they realized that people actually spent, I wish I remember the percentage, but X percent more. I want to buy that ice cream for my buddy, or I want to get this. But if you have hard cash, it's like, I kind of want to hold on to that a little bit more. So it's absolutely true. And what I found is if you track, that can take almost the place of feeling that pain of spending cash because you're having to stay accountable to it at some point.
Well, it gives you the power to at least make your own decisions.
Absolutely.
Okay, look, I spent $300 on wine last month, and I'm okay with that.
There you go.
Right, but you get to make that decision as opposed to not knowing where $200 of that $300 went. And you're like, oh my God, mm-hmm. we bought that much wine. I don't even like wine. Right?
It could go either way.
So I, you're doing the Lord's work on this helping people who are in trouble.
Mm-hmm.
The next question for me is, why are they getting in trouble? Why can't we do something? People of your skills that are willing to invest the time and energy mm-hmm. that you can't we get to people earlier in the cycle before they get in this kind of trouble?
Yeah. I mean, if you think about it, if someone's coming into college these days, now, and I will say this, Georgia is fantastic with the Hope Scholarship and a lot of the different things they offer here. For the average person coming into college, if their parents haven't saved adequately or saved up for college expenses, there's really the only option is to take student loans out or because oftentimes, you can't always work to pay for that much. You can pay for a chunk of it if you want to work hard and, work a lot of part-time jobs. But yeah, absolutely. And I actually just did an interview with UGA's newspaper of helping college kids realize just because you don't have a lot of income, you can still budget. You can still get on track of this thing, on top of this thing.
So, and that's your advice for young people is to kind of attack this early on before, you're out in the workforce.
Yeah.
At least start to get the habits correct and build the foundation.
Yeah. And I'd even go even a step further. If you've got teenagers, if you're giving them an allowance, build them into the process. If they want to save up for a car, maybe say, okay, if you save this amount, we as your parents will chip in X percent. If you mm-hmm. save up half, we'll contribute half. And you've built that muscle of, the discipline of saving and not just purchasing right when you have the cash in your hand at a young age.
So now, your perfect client for this type of work is who? Like, what's the pain? Are they in debt? Is it too late? Or like, can you get them early? When do you like to start working with a client?
Yeah, it's a great question. I enjoy working with everyone. I would say who I really enjoy working with though are people in their 20s or early 30s.
Mm-hmm.
There's a they just have a tendency to be open and willing to make change or to actually do the change, and not to say that folks who are a little older than that aren't likely to make the change, but it's just a little bit harder,
Right. They don't have that many bad habits yet.
right. Yeah. And I think again with social media, the opposite can have that we talked about earlier. You can see somebody and you want what they have. But it can also drive people to be motivated to say, I want to be able to save money so I can do those things. So mm-hmm. it can have that opposite effect.
So for you, you want that person that if they are struggling with a little financial aid debt, the student loan debt,
mm-hmm.
that's a good prospect for you because
yeah.
you feel like you can really make an impact and really give them the skills in order to get out of that debt.
Yeah. I would say the three big things that I work with are people's student loans, credit cards, and car notes.
Mm-hmm.
Or just people who just spend everything they have. They have no debt, but they just
they're not getting ahead.
Exactly.
So, do you actually have prospects like the rest of us, or are people? Is your phone ringing off the hook? Are people knocking down? Because a lot of us in the business world,
mm-hmm.
We try to practice our craft. We try to get good at it, but we also have to go get business.
Yeah.
Is there a sales and marketing component to your world, or they're just coming to you now?
I've just started. So MoneyPath is a relatively new business that I started. So it's about four or five months old now. And it actually took a little bit of time to get the first few clients. But what I've seen now is that it kind of just took off at the beginning of the year, which people are starting to rethink about, think about it again. And, I want to make changes at the beginning of the year. What I've seen has been my best marketing and strategy and sales strategy is to share stories of people who have done this. Mm-hmm. So that's been one of the things I've tried to do is be transparent and open and honest about my story and just my experience with it. And then just some people that I worked with previously before starting the company that I just helped out for free and just, you know, as a friends and family kind of thing. I'm trying to share their stories and just say, hey, other people have done this. It's possible.
And then for you doing it, is this something they have to work with you for the rest of their life? Or is this something that you just give them some skills and it's like a 90-day engagement to get them on the right track and you're checking in? Or is this like every day I got to call you? Like, how does it work?
So I actually would love if I could work myself out of every client. I hope they never have to call me ever again. I would love for that to be the case. How it typically works is I'll work with clients for a number of sessions. And it really just depends on the situation. So if someone has debt, it might be 3 or 4 sessions. If someone just wants to get on a budget, it might be 1 or 2. And then what I do is I have an accountability partner service. So that's what I'm calling it. And every month I'll check in with you once a week or once every 2 weeks with either a video call or a text or an email, just saying, okay, we set up this goal when we met in our past session. What progress have you made on it? Mm-hmm. In my work with the clients that I've worked with so far, just over the past 4 or so years, I've seen the number one reason people stay motivated and stick to this is if they have accountability in place. And I actually saw a stat. It said you're 50% likely to achieve a goal if you write it down. You're 95% likely to achieve a goal if you have regularly scheduled accountability meetings on the calendar, which mm-hmm. that was a very eye-opening stat for me.
And then, so then you have that service as well. That's a kind of a monthly mm-hmm. Fee they would pay you just to kind of keep checking and keep them on track.
Correct. Yep.
Good stuff. So if somebody wants to learn more, what's the best way to get a hold of you?
Yeah, you can go to findyourmoneypath.com. And I'm also on all the big social media sites. So Facebook, Instagram, at findyourmoneypath. Mm-hmm.
And then instead of pictures of you on vacation, it's just you with your bank statements.
That's it. That's it.
Well, thanks for coming to hang out with us, man. This is very helpful, very informative. I love the idea. Well, there's two things I like. I love the idea of employing an accountability partner. Because mm-hmm. I think that you're really tapping into some of those just ingrained driving forces. If Lee's my accountability partner on anything, I don't want our Tuesday call. I don't want to have to tell him I didn't do what I said I was going to do last Tuesday. Yeah. That's got to be very powerful. And I particularly love, as a conscious capitalist, the fact that you're providing value for that. Mm-hmm. You're charging a fee for that. They're getting their return for that. And what a terrific piece of a business model to be an accountability partner. Just getting a check for being an accountability partner. You should get a check for that.
Yeah.
That's fantastic.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. Yeah.
Hey, stay with us. We're going to visit one more guest.
Okay? Absolutely. I'm looking forward to it.
All right, Lee, you ready for this?
I am.
Okay. Next up on the High Velocity Radio Show, we have with us CEO with the PVA, Miss Melissa Smith. How are you?
I'm doing very well. Thank you.
Well, it is such a delight to have you back in the studio. But I would like to ask before we begin your segment formally, what'd you learn in that last one? Did you pick up any tips and insights from the
last time I was here?
That too, but I'm talking about the conversation we just had with the gentleman.
Oh, yes. I am a big fan of budgeting for everything, and including my time. So one of the things that I do, people say, I don't know how you could do what you do or travel or this and that. And I exchange what I find as a priority. So I traveled the world last year and I got back and I put down on paper, is it going to be worth it for me to buy a car now that I'm back? Because I really don't want a car and I plan to spend the summer abroad. So I took a budget of like $6,000 and then said, okay, $6,000, that would get me a car that could get me from A to B. Now I have to add on insurance. I have to add on gas. I have to add on tires, oil changes, and I mean, you know something's going to go wrong on a $6,000 car.
Sure.
So, I mean, you add in all those things. And I thought, you know what? It would be cheaper for me to spend $500 a month on a rental car than it would for me to purchase a car. And that same $500 a month, when 3 months out of the year, I won't even be here. So for me, it was a no-brainer. I rented a car today. It cost me $30.
There you go. Good thinking.
So now you are with the PVA, and that's the personal virtual assistant.
Yes.
And you've been doing that for a while.
3 years now.
3 years. Mm-hmm. And not only do you do it for clients, or I don't think you do it for clients anymore right now, you just help other people.
I do have a personal client. I keep one or two personal clients.
Just to practice.
Got to keep up my game, you know?
So have you noticed a change in the industry, that people's expectations, or they're more knowledgeable now than they were 3 years ago?
Not necessarily, because virtual assistance is such a broad term. So mm-hmm. now I think more than ever, I meet people who think virtual assistance is artificial intelligence.
Oh, really?
So, yes.
So now you're a robot. That's interesting.
Yes.
So you didn't have those questions before 3 years
ago,
right?
No,
they weren't confused in that manner.
Yeah, no. Before it was like, how does that work? What does that mean? And now it's very much now like
you're,
AI?
You're
like,
Alexa.
Are you a bot? Like, you know, no, we don't work like that.
So now, so how do you work?
So I match clients with the right virtual assistant. So I do an assessment of where they are now, where they want to be, their budget, what they want to accomplish. And I make my recommendation on what type of virtual assistant they have, how much money they should be spending, what's going to make the biggest impact immediately, mm-hmm. and how they're going to receive a return on their investment now. And then the other side of my business, which came after my last book, was I had a lot of virtual assistants reaching out to me that said, hey, how can I do this? Or I'm struggling. How can I do this on my own? How can I do it as a side business and earn extra income? So now I wrote my second book to teach them how to become a virtual assistant that's successful, because you can be a virtual assistant and spend all your time, but not actually be successful because you're just still breaking even, making ends meet, because there's a difference between virtual assistants and running a business. So I teach them how to run a business.
So the business of being a virtual assistant is different than just assisting people virtually.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So for instance, if I am already an admin in the office right now, and I said, you know what, I'm going to try to do virtual assistants on the side, and hopefully one day I'm going to leave the office altogether. I'm going to ditch 9 to 5.
So people think that's
yes.
common, right? There's a lot
yes.
of people out there that go, look, I do this anyway. Mm-hmm. I'll just do more of it at night in my free time.
Right.
So that's the thinking.
That's the thinking.
And they think it's easy because I already do it all day long.
That's right.
So now what's the landmines?
The first question is, where do I find my clients?
Yeah. So they didn't think of that because they already have a client.
Right. they think it's getting a job.
Right. So I got to find another client. So.
And then the second question is, how do I get rid of this client?
Because this is a guy's a pain. Right.
Right. Because they don't think of it. Although they think it's as easy as getting a job, they don't put as much time and effort into looking for the right client to work for, because they don't actually have to go into an office. So when you actually have to go into an office, you want to like the people, you think about the commute, you think about right. what you can wear to work, the benefits, all these things. Somehow they think because you don't have to see this person.
It'll be easier.
It'll be much easier. You can right. work for anybody. And then they find out that's not how it goes.
So like, how are they, so this person's working in an office, and then that's a certain skill to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Now they're on their own, and now they're mm-hmm. an entrepreneur, because mm-hmm. nighttime version of them is a virtual assistant.
Mm-hmm.
How are they even attempting to get a client? Like, do they just go on Facebook and hey, I'm available for virtual assistanting. Know anybody? Like, how are they going out
yeah,
to market then?
That's a lot of what they do. And they're coming up with crickets on that, because that's not mm-hmm. how it works.
Right. So that doesn't work like that.
No, you actually have to really find out who your client is.
Like who the optimal client for you.
Who your ideal client is for you.
Because you might have a superpower that, I'm good at just general typing or admin stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But somebody else might be good at, like Steven, I'm good at helping people with their budget. So there's probably a virtual assistant that helps people with budgets,
there's
right?
a virtual assistant for everything.
And very specific.
And very
niche,
specific.
Right?
Yes.
And that's probably better, right? The more niche you are.
Absolutely.
And that's probably a misconception.
It's absolutely a misconception. And I constantly have to tell people, you have to niche now. It's not forever. But as you grow, your niche will stay in the same vein. You will find that one path leads to another one. You're not going to just all of a sudden pivot and go the
right.
complete opposite direction unless you were down the wrong road in the beginning. That's not the way it works. And people are always searching for something really far from who they are. And it doesn't work like that either. Your ideal clients are going to mirror you in some way, shape, or form.
Right. And so is that like they think they're going to miss out on something? So they go, look, I can't be that. That's too small. you know, what if they ask me to do this other thing? I don't want to miss that opportunity.
They think by going really wide, they're going to attract more people.
Because there's more people.
Right. And so I have to tell them, okay, if you had a full client load, let's say that's 10, and 10 is a lot for one virtual assistant. That's a really...
Really? So 10 is a bit...
10 is a huge number.
And they're
number.
Probably not thinking in those terms. No. They're probably thinking, I can handle 100.
Right. So why, instead of trying to go after everybody, the thousands and the millions of people, wherever you're posting,
right,
why not specifically go to the 10 people that you want to work for?
Right. The 10 best.
The 10.
Right. Let's start there.
There's your full client load, and your client load is probably 5. You're
in
probably
real
not
life.
Gonna be more. Yeah.
Right.
So you don't need to do all these things, and you don't need to spend a lot of money. That's the other thing. I'm going to go and I'm going to market to this stranger, and this stranger is going to trust me virtually to take over their business,
right,
and give me their documents. And it doesn't work that way.
And because in real life, people barely trust anybody, and they
right.
know them personally. They are your neighbor, and you're not letting them in your house.
Right.
You know?
So it's about, let's get this done. Let's find the right clients. Let's not spend any money on marketing, because really what people want to call marketing now is really your sales plan, but no one likes to sell. So if we change it up and call it sexy something like marketing.
I'm not like, a salesperson.
Yeah.
I'm a marketer.
And we just cut that out and we get down to, you know, brass tacks and like, no, you're in sales now. So this is not blind marketing where you're hoping and you're putting
right.
something out there and people are just going to come to you. This is, you're going to actually sell your services to a person who is going to personally buy from you. It costs nothing to do that. And that's what is most effective.
So when you say it costs nothing to do that, it may not cost dollars to do that, but it costs time to do that.
It does cost time. In the beginning, it doesn't take as much time as people think. What costs them time is really the procrastination, because they don't want to do it.
Oh, procrastination.
Procrastination, yeah.
So if only I had a virtual assistant who can handle my procrastination, is there someone
yeah.
out there for that?
Probably.
Yeah. I mean, if you're paying someone to do something, they're waiting on you, you're going to get it done.
Mm-hmm. So what's the difference between a virtual assistant and a coach?
So a coach is someone who brings out the best in you. You have your natural talents and they kind of ask you questions and they help you get to your place that you need to be by helping you realize it first. Right? This could be over time. It could be like tweaking here and there. You're going to ask a question and the coach is going to ask you another question back. Right?
So you're kind of a virtual assistant coach.
No, I'm a consultant, because I'm just going to tell you what to do.
Okay. So you're
we don't have time.
I don't have time for coaching.
You need to make money right now.
So a consultant is more action-based.
Yes.
And not hypothetical,
yes.
theoretical.
Yeah. No, I don't have any special quotes to give you. I don't have any magic quote cards, memes, nothing to give you. I'm going to tell you exactly what to do to make money. And that's how I train virtual assistants, by consulting them. Because when people aren't making money, they are not making good decisions.
Mm-hmm.
And they're grasping at straws and they're not doing the right things. Now, as a virtual assistant for a client, how I help them as an assistant versus like
a coach.
It sounds like
there's a lot of yelling.
There's no, it's very much like, you said you wanted to do XYZ.
Yes.
What happened to XYZ plan? Are we abandoning that plan?
So you're,
or are we going
so
here?
You're,
whoa,
sounds like you're an accountability partner.
There's somebody in our leadership team that speaks very much like that to me almost every day. And I'm glad she does.
Yeah. So, I mean, and there's different types of virtual assistants. So I'm an executive virtual assistant for my clients. So for me, my job is to make sure that they do what they said they wanted to do. And until they tell me we are abandoning ship, I am like the Terminator. We're going to get it done. This is, you said what you wanted to do. I'm not going to let it go. You're going to have to take it off the list, but if, you know, you can call it whatever you want, but I'm going to follow up with you every time until you tell me, okay, you know what? I no longer want to do that. It's no longer important to me.
Stop.
Then it's
I'm
fine.
I'm pulling the ripcord. I want to do something else. Then. Mm-hmm. So now for you, you said you only have a handful of clients. Now, are these clients that you've had for a long period of time that, you know, you're kind of stuck with now because they've been with you for a while and you haven't fired them, they haven't fired you?
No. So my matchmaking clients, the clients that I match to the right virtual assistant, those are 3-month commitment. So after I match them, I stay with them for the first 3 months, help
to make
walk
sure
them through.
It's a good fit.
Yeah, have an onboarding plan, make sure that they're doing the right things, that they are not getting off track. I help them with, you know, the whole onboarding process, because it can be something that's very unfamiliar. So I want to make sure it's successful. So they had me for the first 3 months. My coaching or my consulting VAs, it just depends. Sometimes I work with them for 8 weeks, or I work with them for 3 months, depending if we're in a class or we're doing one-to-one consulting. For my private clients, I do 6-month contracts. So I've had the same private client now for a year, and I had another one for 6 months. It was more, but that was what we thought it might be, and that's what it was.
And then that's by choice. You're saying, I only want a handful of these. I want more of these. That's just part of your own business plan.
Right. So that's my business model. So my private clients, they pay me a large sum of money a month, regardless of how many hours I work. What they're paying me for.
So you don't go by hours.
No.
It's like outcome based. You're,
right.
You're helping them achieve a goal.
Right. And what they're paying me for is pretty much to be on call. So no matter where I am in the world or what I'm doing, when I get that message, when I get that call, when I get that email, I'm dropping other things and assisting them. And that's the kind of premium service that they're looking for. Mm-hmm. So there's only a few people that really want or desire that kind of service and want to pay that fee. And so I only take on 1 to 2 of those clients at a time, because I can't drop everything for a multitude of people.
Now, when they're asking you to do that, are they say, so are you doing a task? So they're like, okay, I need you to write a proposal, or I need you to do something. Or is it something that you're like just helping them be accountable and helping them get the most out of themselves?
You know, it varies a lot from client to client. So for this client I've had for a year now, when we first started together, the first thing he needed me to do was manage his move from San Francisco to Hawaii. So
you're the one calling the mover.
Movers,
you're the one making sure the artwork is not going to break in transit.
Yeah, getting cars shipped over, coordinating with the apartment that he was in San Francisco with the movers, because they only can do it at certain times and they have to come through the back and then on the other side. And once that shipment getting to Hawaii, and then once they get there.
Because that became your problem.
Yeah. And then finding doctors once they're there, right. Nannies, getting that all situated, then coordinating with the business side of his other business, because he's running multiple businesses, getting that all set up, creating a new business system to pay the bills, because now he's not in the office anymore. He's over here.
Right. So all that became your problem.
All of it.
And that's what they're paying for, is you to make those problems go away.
Mm-hmm.
And that's ultimately what you're teaching the virtual assistants that you work with, right? Is that that's their job, is to make their clients' problems go away.
Right. Right. Their clients have a pain. Your job is to make that pain go away.
Mm-hmm. And then is that difficult to communicate, or the people that are attracted to this line of business, that's how they're wired anyway?
That's how they're wired anyways. What they're not wired for is to know how to charge for it, know how to make money from it, know how to make it scalable, which is the last thing that you do. Everyone's so hung up on scaling. I'm like, well, let's get clients first, then we'll worry if it's scalable. There's other things involved on, you know, how to get people that really are just like, I just let me throw money at you to make this problem go away, versus someone who's like, I don't know, let's talk about this invoice for a second. What is this right here? What is this all about? You don't want to ever work with someone like that, because it means you're not a good fit for each other. You're not understanding each other.
Well, you're not appreciating each other's value.
Right.
And that's where you focus more on value and outcomes rather than transactions and tasks specifically.
Right. And then once we get into that, then we talk about boundaries, managing yourself, managing the client relationship, because then once they do take on more clients and become more successful, now it's like, wow, how do I manage all this? How do I manage my own boundaries? What am I doing wrong? And then, you know, they become successful and they go out and they are like spinning their head. I'm making all the money I said I wanted to, but I can't enjoy it. I feel like I'm working all the time.
Right.
And then they do a client cleanse. So then they feel like it's their clients, the same clients
that you were so desperate to have. Right. Now they're a hassle.
Right. So then they start to pare down, or maybe they even like stop working for several months. And that's another issue I have, because
they got to recreate.
Yeah.
Start the wheel moving again is a lot harder than keeping it moving.
Absolutely. So we work through that process as well, because there is a point where you have to manage yourself before you can manage anybody else.
Right. Now, how do you do the pricing part? Now, a person who does this type of service, the price really is any price. It's whatever the client's going to pay. But a lot of times, the person who is doing the work, maybe they devalue themselves or their skills or what their price in the marketplace is, and they have a hard time, you know, with a straight face saying, I charge blah, 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 mm-hmm. you know, because in their head, they're used to making less than that. So how do you kind of coach them to a point where they can ask for an amount of money that can really keep them able to do this?
Well, the first thing I teach them is that pricing is not a competition. You can't price what you need to make based on someone else's prices. You need to look at your own budget. You need to look what you need to make. You need to look at what's fair in the marketplace, what you have enough experience and can demand. And you have to think about not one client paying you this much per year. You will have multiple clients. So you need to be able to break that up. And then from there, you have to figure out what is your ultimate goal to make? You know, you don't have to make six figures. I know that's like the biggest thing right now. Make six figures. I'll teach you how to make six figures. Everyone wants to do that. Not everyone needs to make six figures to be happy, to pay their bills. That's not, you need to figure out what you need to make and then put that dollar amount on everything. So if you need to make 40, but you're like, you know what, it would be nice to make $50,000 a year. And then you take that extra 10 and then you put that $10 allocated to something. And maybe that allocation is to pay down debt, or maybe it's to save for your kid's college fund, or you need a new car. And you have to put that dollar amount on something. Otherwise, you'll just spend it, waste it.
It's absorbed by the universe.
Yeah.
Right.
And then from there, you can break it down and have a plan for, that means I need to charge X amount of dollars. It would take this many clients, and this is what I can do, and this is sustainable, and you will feel your value. It's not some random number. It's not some random hourly figure. It's not some random project fee. It has meaning to you. It has to have meaning. It cannot be random.
And then you don't want to kind of negotiate off of that number just kind of haphazardly.
Right. Right?
You got to really honor that number.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And negotiating is great. I talk about negotiation in my class because it gives you a lot of insight to what people are actually negotiating. Because more than likely, people won't negotiate your prices. They'll negotiate your services. What they're saying is, you know, I don't need all that. Like, I just need this. And that's an opportunity to say, well, okay, well, if we take out those other services, we can still work together. Right. And now this is my price.
And then managing those expectations, that's an important part of this job, especially virtual, where you're not really seeing the people face to face and not really kind of seeing all the body language cues, right?
Absolutely.
Clarity is really important.
Absolutely. And you have to make yourself present. You have to check in. You have to respond. You have to let someone know that you're a body on the other end. And more importantly, you have to celebrate your client wins. They need to know it, because it's so easy for someone to hit the mark. But in their mind, they already knew that they were going to get there, right? Because we're entrepreneurs, we're business owners. We're not going to do something thinking, oh yeah, I'm going to fail. Like, that's not right. What we do. And there comes a point, usually at the 70% mark, we're almost 70% to our goal. And at that point, we start to feel the excitement of it. And we start to celebrate in that point because we can see it. So then when we hit it, maybe like we go out for dinner, we do like a virtual high five, or like we tell a friend, we tell our like mastermind group, but that's it, it's over. And we're already on to the next thing. And as an assistant, that's the best time to get in with your clients and say, you know, we need to stop for a second. This was awesome. You did X, Y, Z. Here's what you thought was going to happen. Here's what really happened. We exceeded our goals. Like, this is what you wanted to do. I'm so glad you hired me for it. I'm so glad I could share this with you. What's next?
So then you start just kind of re-upping and then just keeping the engagement going.
Absolutely.
So now the person that is contemplating becoming a virtual assistant, or maybe they're frustrated by the way it's going right now, mm-hmm. this book is perfect for them, right?
Yeah, absolutely. It's literally a step-by-step guide of how to become a successful virtual assistant. It comes with a complimentary workbook. This is it. I have nothing. There's a lot of people that will sell you one thing one week and sell you another thing
right.
another week. And here's the latest tip and trick.
Right.
This is not. This is, I will
it's the encyclopedia.
This is it. I got nothing else. If you can't do this, then you're done. Everything else will come and go. Like right now, everyone's scrambling for all their old Facebook stuff because Facebook changed up again. So now everyone's selling the latest. Oh, here's how we're doing this. You know, Facebook is everything else that you can't control is always going to change. So you need to have a business model. Business principles don't go away.
Before we wrap, I got to hear at least one story, one example, one experience from this world tour of yours over the past year. What, something that you particularly enjoyed or found surprising? Or...
So from my traveling the world, there were so many.
But it was like, you took the whole year, right? And went all over the place last year.
Yeah, I did 16 countries in 12 months.
Wow.
While running my business.
And she kept her business going. It's not like you just took a sabbatical.
She's a virtual assistant.
Yeah.
I know. It's virtual. But I mean, that's incredible.
She walked the walk. It wasn't theoretical.
You know what? And you know what? I think that's my biggest takeaway. I didn't realize how much I love to walk. I love to walk from place to place. There was a time when I loved to drive, and driving was a sense of like freedom, and right. It gave me this, like, that was my own space.
I can go anywhere.
I can hop in my car and I'm out of here.
Right.
I no longer feel that way. It's been a long time since I've lived in a place where you could walk everywhere. And my favorite cities were the cities I could walk and run in. If I couldn't, that was not my favorite city. I still like them. But I knew this was not like going to be a long-term place for me to come back. That walking from place to place and just having a stroll, or it made all the difference.
Right.
In the
world. Quality of life.
Yes.
Now, why'd you come back? How come you didn't just keep going?
You know, I have two kids. I have family. I miss everyone very much. But yeah, my lifestyle has definitely changed. So I'll spend the summer abroad.
So you're now a nomad periodically?
So I like to say location independent. Independent because nomadic is kind of, they're just like random. I'm not random in any way, shape, or form.
So your business obviously is fitting towards that end. Mm-hmm. And then now going into this year, what's the game plan? So you had the 12-month run.
Mm-hmm.
So now what's ahead?
Yeah. So I've done a lot of traveling since I've been back already throughout the States, which I knew I would be. I'll spend the summer abroad. I'll come back in the fall. But business-wise, the book's doing well. I'll teach a couple online classes. I'll do another summit, more remote work consulting for people and companies who still haven't figured out how to hire successfully and what that looks like for their remote employees. And yeah, just helping
your
people.
Your guy's now in Hawaii. Who knows where he'll be in 6 months, right?
Yeah, I think he's there for a while. I have another baby on the way, so.
All right. So if somebody wanted to learn more, either a VA or anybody else anywhere touching this field, it seems like you have a way to help them.
Yeah, they can reach me at thepva.com. My email is melissa@thepva.com, Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn. I'm there. Oh, and I have a YouTube channel now.
Do you really?
Yes.
All that traveling is good. Good production value there.
Yeah.
Oh, we'll have to check that out. Well, thanks so much for coming back and visiting with us. Keep us posted.
I will. Thank you for having me.
All right. Until next time, this is Stone Payton for Lee Cantor, our producer, Katie Galley, our guest this afternoon, and everyone here at the Business Radio X family saying we'll see you in the fast lane.